The climate is changing. So are we. I'm Laura Lynch, and I host What on Earth? That's CBC's Climate Solutions podcast. Twice a week, we take you around the world to find the people who are trying to build a better future for all of us. We explore indigenous science, new technologies. We talk openly about mental health and climate anxiety. We also take your smart questions all the time. Come find What on Earth wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
This is World Report. Good morning, I'm John Northcott. We begin in British Columbia and a major shift in the province's response to the overdose crisis gripping the country. It's rolling back its controversial drug decriminalization pilot project and once again banning drug use in public spaces. Tanya Fletcher explains why.
Barely a year after BC proudly announced a Canada first, decriminalizing small amounts of hard drugs, Premier David Eby is now walking it back.
This amendment will make public drug use illegal in British Columbia.
Complaints have been growing about problematic open drug use at parks, hospitals, and bus stops. A handful of current and former drug users we spoke with say decriminalization has gone too far.
It's permission to do it wherever you want, right?
Like, sit on the sidewalk and use Riggsville. We have little children walking by us.
Everybody's like going, yeah, like we can do anything we want now. So if they thought they were helping them, they hurt them 10 times more.
The changes will recriminalize drug use in public places. People who merely possess drugs won't be arrested unless they're threatening public safety or causing a disturbance. But experts warn the overall drug crisis is much bigger than simply giving power back to police to make arrests. Mark Hayden is with UBC's School of Population and Public Health.
Playgrounds should not have people injecting drugs on them. That makes complete sense. But people are only injecting in inappropriate environments if they don't have access to appropriate environments. And that's the goal that we need to have.
And with political opponents forcing the issue to the forefront of an upcoming election, it leaves this provincial government with a lot still to wrestle with in the fight for public support. Tanya Fletcher, CBC News, Vancouver.
The showdown between Washington and Beijing over TikTok is raising questions in Canada. The United States has told the Chinese parent company of the popular app it must sell off its interest or face a ban in the U.S. Catherine Cullen, host of CBC Radio's The House, has more.
Canadian stand-up comedian Matthew Pozitsky says TikTok is the best way to reach a younger audience, but he's not convinced the new U.S. law will result in a ban in that country or have ripple effects here.
I understand that it might be a possibility, but I'm kind of living in the present.
The legislation, signed by President Joe Biden on Wednesday, cites national security concerns. There are fears the Chinese government could lean on TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, to access user information. The new law gives ByteDance about 9 months to sell TikTok, or the app will be banned in the U.S. ByteDance says it doesn't intend to sell the company. Canadian officials are watching.
The move by the United States is framing the discussions.
Industry Minister François-Philippe Champagne points out last month, Canada launched its own national security review of TikTok. He says Canadian and U.S. officials are exchanging information about any security concerns, and he's determined to ensure Canadians are protected. Catherine Cullen, CBC News, Ottawa.
Student anti-war protesters at U.S. universities are digging in. They're vowing to keep their demonstrations going through the weekend. Stanford, the latest school to join the nationwide protest. Mania Kawamea is one of the protesters there.
We're planning to stay here to insist that the university discloses and divests from occupied Palestine. And I think so many of us are willing to be here for as long as is necessary.
But for some parents, it is just too much. Shahar Sahati lived in Israel for years after escaping from his birthplace, Iran. He was visiting the campus to drop off his daughter.
They are brainwashing people in Stanford. They have to be the smartest kids in the world. They should do the research on their own, not to listen to a bunch of lies that these people are creating here.
Some university presidents, meanwhile, are coming under fire from faculties for calling in law enforcement to disperse the crowds. At Columbia University, the school's Senate is criticizing its president for the arrest of more than 100 protesters this week. And now to wild weather being experienced around the world this morning. We begin in the United States, where tornado warnings are now lifted for much of the U.S. Midwest, but the damage is done.
New It was so scary. It was so scary. Our neighbors, everyone's houses are—they're gone. They're gone.
That's one resident of Omaha, Nebraska, describing the devastation in her neighborhood. More than 60 tornadoes were reported across 5 states, including Kansas, Missouri, and Oklahoma. There are no reported deaths, but several people were injured. Hundreds of homes flattened. In Nebraska, an industrial building collapsed in the storm, trapping 70 people inside. Forecasters say more violent weather is expected today. Meanwhile, weeks of heavy rains are wreaking havoc in East Africa. People react as a swollen river overturns a truck in southern Kenya, spilling its passengers into the rushing floodwaters. At least 45 people have died in Kenya's flooding since March. In neighboring Tanzania, the toll even higher. Journalist Isaac Lukando is in Dar es Salaam.
23-year-old Adita Malengo points to the spot where her bedroom once stood. Heavy rainfall diverted a nearby river from its course, sweeping away her home. A smile masks her distress as she faces homelessness.
We want the government to help us. This river needs to return to its original path.
Many homes by the Mbezi River in Dar es Salaam exceed the government's 60-meter construction limit near water bodies. Residents fear their homes won't endure the ongoing rainfall, which the government blames on environmental degradation and the El Niño weather phenomenon. Flash floods have been reported in 14 of the 26 regions in mainland Tanzania, affecting 200,000 people and damaging 10,000 houses. At least 155 people have died. Heavy rains also swept through neighboring Kenya and Burundi, causing a regional humanitarian crisis. Giving a report to Tanzania's parliament on the situation, Prime Minister Kassim Majaliwa says they're taking action. But residents like Malengo worry aid won't arrive on time. They, like many others in East Africa, wait anxiously for a solution as heavy rains persist. Isaac Lukanda for CBC News, Dar es Salaam.
And large parts of South and Southeast Asia are battling an intense heat wave. At least 30 people have died in Thailand, and UNICEF says that over 240 million children are at risk if temperatures continue to soar. Journalist Neha Punya has the latest from New Delhi.
Bangladesh has asked over 30 million children not to go to school because of rising temperatures. It's the same story in the Philippines too, as thousands of schools cancelled classes as temperatures crossed the 40-degree mark. Thailand's capital has warned the heat this week would touch extremely dangerous levels. The country saw 37 heat-related deaths last year, but in the first 4 months of this year alone, Thailand has already lost 30 citizens to heat stroke. Concerns rising in India too, which is in the middle of a month-and-a-half-long election. Weather officials have issued a warning for a severe heatwave alert, and people quite literally feeling the heat. Last year, India saw over 100 deaths due to a heatwave. With the mercury likely to cross 45 degrees, the forecast this year is not encouraging. Neha Punia for CBC News, New Delhi.
And finally, this week, Italy passed an amendment that allows anti-abortion groups inside abortion clinics to offer so-called counseling. That has led to protests across Rome. But the way the issue is covered by a popular talk show is also sparking anger. Megan Williams is in Rome with the details.
A not unfamiliar scene on Italian TV talk shows, a manel or all-male panel discussing the news of the day. In this case, though, the 7 male politicians and experts were debating a new law to allow anti-abortion groups access to women about to have the procedure. As this far-right politician put it, to support them in making a free choice. In response, women in Italy got mad. Then one TV show got even. Piccolissimi passi, ma... A few days later, with Italian comedian Geppi Cucciari hosting a panel of female experts. The topic? The effectiveness of men buying SUVs and other big vehicles to compensate for erectile dysfunction.
Comprarsi un SUV può essere un rimedio efficace contro l'impotenza maschile.
Two serious nods and graphics with statistics. The women point out how cheaper SUV leasing options have helped a lot of men suffering from impotence.
Un affitto a lungo termine, quindi per il maschio e per l'impotenza maschile.
And debate whether a husband has the right to decide the size of his own car, or if his wife gets a say too. The female panel is a comic response to what feminists here say are two serious issues: the shrinking access to abortion and the lack of female voices on panels. Megan Williams, CBC News, Rome.
And that is the latest national and international news from World Report. I'm John Northcott. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us here at CBC News.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.